T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Thanks for listening to the Dusty and Cam podcast, brought to you by Les Schwab Tire Centers. It'll be the best 45 minutes of your life, I promise. Doing the right thing since 1952.
Dusty and Cam in the morning.
This was never about money for us. It was about us against the system. That system that kills the human spirit. We stand for something.
With Dusty Hera.
I've had the old bull. Now I want the young calf.
And NFL veteran Cam Cleland.
Play action for Mark Bulger, firing into the end zone. Cam Cleland's got it. Touchdown Rams. With 2:11 to play, a 17-yard connection. Mark Bulger to Cam Cleland.
On 1080 The Fan.
Good morning. Happy Wednesday to you. A little hump day in the Rose City. My goodness.
Day 3 in the closet. Haven't come out yet. Day really? 3. Day 3.
How's that feel?
Day 3.
Yeah, you...
Un, deux, trois.
A little, getting
uno,
a little
dos,
antsy
tres.
In here. Getting a little antsy in here. We have not tried your wingspan yet to see how close you are to the walls, if you can just touch all of
meaningless.
Them.
Meaningless.
I think it would be meaningful if we did that. It'd be a nice little exercise to do.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
we are still here. We're trucking on, and it feels good. It feels good.
Hey, we're going to deliver. We're going to deliver the same show, the same effort, the same content.
I thought it felt good yesterday.
We got Cougar legend Ryan Leaf coming on the show.
He
and I are. You go way back.
You guys go back. You
we
had some
back.
Apple Cup battles. How did you guys do in the Apple Cup again? Were you guys split?
We had some great battles.
Well, yeah, I know. The games were really good.
96, 97 were great Apple Cup games. One was good for the Cougs. One was good for the Dogs. We beat them in Pullman.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I had a chance to do some Pac-12 Network stuff last year, and I got to preview that feeling of winning that game in 96 and then getting thumped in 1997 and seeing the Cougs trample Husky Stadium with roses as they were off to the Rose Bowl. Hard to deal with there.
That is.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a tough one to... Yeah. What is that feeling like when you are... You see your bitter rival and they get the biggest... And this is the thing about college football that has changed so dramatically. And it's one thing I actually do not like about the playoff system is that if the Rose Bowl is not a playoff game, then it seems like it's diminished, the value of it. But back then, going to the Rose Bowl was the biggest thing that a Pac-12 team could do, or Pac-10 team could do at the time.
Absolutely. I look forward to talking to Ryan about it because I remember that feeling of knowing that we didn't have that opportunity. And the other question is, even after last week, you look at rivals and you think about the game with Oregon and Washington, how it's involved and how evolved. Just with the Cougs, that emotion is never really going to change. There's not as much visceral and hate between the Cougs and the Huskies, but that game always, the Apple Cup, the end of the year, it's kind of like the Civil War here too. You can't tell me that game doesn't mean more. I mean, every single year you get a chance to see it, even if it's one side's bigger than the other, it doesn't matter. Just the connections, the families, everything that it is, what it's in your state. The Apple Cup will always mean more to me than it does the Washington-Oregon rivalry.
What I always think is funny is last week we had a lot of Duck fans that chimed in on the Better You Today text line 55305, or Duck fans that I saw at Autzen Stadium doing the tailgate reports and stuff and just going around and talking to people. It's funny to hear. During Washington week, I hate Washington more than Oregon State. This is the bigger rivalry than Oregon State. We hate Washington. But when Civil War comes around, I hate Oregon State. You know, you can talk to the same people. Mm-hmm. It's just that rivalry, when you're in it that week, you hate that opponent more than you hate the other guy.
The emotions of it. That's what makes fandom so fun about this. And what makes college football second to none when it comes to the emotions. It really isn't. I mean, the family connection. And We ask every single year, and I mean, I always ask the question that it doesn't mean a lot to you, or how much does it mean to you down to your core? Does it just burn inside your stomach when you get to think about that team beating you for a year, the bragging rights, everything that you get to have from a win? So yeah, no, it means a lot.
Huh. Now, that 97 year, correct me if I'm wrong, that's the year that UCLA finished with the, they were ranked higher than Washington State. That must have been a head-to-head thing, right? Because what, I remember that year where it was like, oh, it was Michigan and Washington State.
Yeah.
And people were saying, well, Washington State or UCLA would have crushed Michigan that year. They were like fifth, but Michigan was like the number one team in the country. And it came down to one possession.
Yeah.
Game the Rose Bowl of Washington State.
But it was Nebraska won the national championship in that year.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, Michigan was in that Rose Bowl game. So, yeah, that was a good, I mean, that was a great football year.
Yeah. I'm looking at this. I'm looking at it right now. A UCLA and Washington State played the first game of the season, and it was at Washington State, and the Cougs won. So they had the head-to-head week one. And the very last game of the year was.
Oh, how many times I've told the story of the older Pac-10 at the time, where you always opened up with a Pac-10 or Pac-12 game on the road, or sometimes, of course, you're hosting it. It doesn't really matter. I mean, so that was, it was way different now, where you have three, not patty cakes, but warm-up games.
A little.
Non-conference games. It gives you time to kind of settle into conference.
A little toe dipping. You dip your toe into the season and then you get going.
Oh, how different it is now.
I do like the, there should be a little bit of that urgency at the beginning of a year, though. Maybe not.
You don't think a Pac-12 game would be great to start the season?
No, I do. That's what I'm saying. Is
I'm sorry.
I think that there should be some, the urgency should be there at the beginning of a year to play somebody with something that matters. And then you can go into those.
So one within the first 3 weeks or one within the first 2 weeks or opener?
I think like an opener.
Everybody opens or just one?
I think everybody opens with the conference game and then you can
kind of
get
into it.
Boy, that
would put the hammer down really early. That was the norm. I mean, I was used to that. That was pretty simple.
But at the same time, like if you got some guys you don't know about and you're sitting there, you get some questions, it's good to work through those patty cake games. I mean, just look at Oregon's a prime example of this year. I mean, they had some things that they needed to work through. They were far from a perfect team or a team that we felt confident in Bowling Green, San Jose State, right?
Yeah.
Because there were people, Boo Birds came out week one against Bowling Green. Bowling Green, Boo Birds were coming out in Autzen Stadium in that first half, and they end up cruising to a victory in that one. But if you can't afford to do that against a Pac-12 opponent or a conference opponent, I think that urgency would be great. But at the same time, you look at it and you go, no, it is kind of good to work through some stuff early.
Yeah.
And then how you peak later. LSU was a good example of that for Oregon a few years back when D'Anthony Thomas had his fumbles in Jerry's world, and they end up stubbing their toe in that early game. It affected their entire season after that. So I'm on both sides of it, but I would like to see the Pac-12 go back to a conference game week one, start it off. The SEC does
so
it
every,
sometimes.
Yeah, no matter what, every year have some sort of opener. I'm thinking I would feel more comfortable saying within the first 3 weeks. I could say kind of like what Stanford does with USC, and those games are really important. I don't mind it being a laugher. I just don't like three laughers where you're just not getting the type of competition you would like to get and get ready for the season. But if you're Oregon this year, your schedule's been set up, you've played it, you've done a good job with it, you're just one or two plays away from being undefeated, it doesn't matter. You're carrying it into this week, and this week doesn't get any bigger.
Booyah! All right, so you mentioned it, Ryan Leaf, former Cougs quarterback, he's going to join us at 6:30. We usually do textuals there, but Ryan Leaf, gracious enough to take some time with us. He will join us. He does a SiriusXM.
Well, that's the reason why, that's the reason why he's going to join us at 6:30, because I'm going to flip it up and go on his show at 9:15.
Are you really?
On his little SiriusXM channel, Pac-12, and we're just going to do a little tradesy.
Look at you hitting the airwaves of satellite radio at 9:15.
I can swear.
You should.
International cam?
What swear word are you going to say? Don't say it. Wait. No, maybe
we
say
don't
it.
Even have a dump button, so be really careful.
I don't know what I would do. I'm not a big swear guy. Yeah, that's a lie.
Will you
sometimes.
Will you do your Booger McFarlane impression for him? Can you please do it?
I don't know that.
That's it. Will you do that?
I'll just speak in booger language.
Yeah, that's right. The SEC fans will understand you just fine.
Very much so.
So Ryan Leaf will join us at 6:30. We'll talk Cougs, College Game Day, heading to the Palouse this year. Oh, I have news, by the way. Will Old Crimson still be flying at games, even though Game Day is going to Pullman?
I have the full history of Old Crimson and the start of Game Day.
Really?
On my nugget today.
Okay. Well, I will tell you this. A report, I did research, it will continue to go. It will continue to go. I can't wait to hear the whole history of it, though. I'm excited for that.
Okay.
Ooh. Northwest Nuggets, tease. 8 a.m. That was a great tease. We'll also have coaches call audio. Mario Cristobal gives an update to Penei Sewell's status as the Oregon offensive tackle is out for a very long time. Also, injury status and updates from Oregon State as well on coaches call audio. And David Shaw kind of went off in the coaches call this week. And it was about the college football format. So we'll have that coming to you at 7:15. Kyle Bonagura of ESPN, he covers the Pac-12. He was at Oregon, Washington. He will be at Washington State, Oregon this weekend. He is a Coug alum. So we'll discuss all things Pac-12 with Kyle Bonagura coming up at 8:15. So we got a locked and loaded show. We got a lot to get to. Look at this show. Starting to do the guest things on a regular basis.
Well, that's what happens when football comes around. You get interested.
Yeah. And when we have a producer that produces stuff, you know?
How about that?
In between now and then, Nick Bosa is leaving up for Ohio State. Big deal or no big deal? And what did the Warriors actually give out to their team as championship rings? You said pinky ring. They went even more obscure than pinky ring.
They went very obscure. In fact,
this is interesting.
Yeah.
This isn't because it's the Swiss Army knife of rings.
As if you needed a ring to be a Swiss Army knife.
Huh?
As if you needed a ring to be a Swiss Army knife.
But can I just tell you right now, this is so Golden State. I mean, if there's anybody that's going to do this, of course they did. And I hope all of them lose everything.
My gosh.
I hope they lose their cute little spinning topper.
All right. Fired up in the morning. I like this. I like where this is headed. All right, but before we get to sports.
I remember it was just like yesterday.
Today in sports history, 1987. The first ever World Series game was played indoors. Seems more commonplace than usual.
It seems very more common.
But it was the Twins hosting the Cardinals. Twins eventually winning it all in Game 7, which clinched a little bit more history in this one, as the home team won every single game in that series. 7-game series. No home team had won every game in the World Series until 1987.
The old Metro Dome.
The Metro Dome. Little Big League. Good or bad movie?
It's all right.
Loved that movie.
Good movie.
It's all right.
Good movie. As a kid, I was hoping that I had like an estranged grandfather that I didn't know who passed away and handed me his professional sports team.
Sure.
And then I could play and coach.
Well, for guys like me and Dusty, we may not have thought we could have made it to the big leagues on the diamond, so I would have had to do it through the front office.
Speak for yourself, Buck.
Well, for me then.
And then I stopped growing.
You guys are selling yourself short. No pun intended there.
Hey, guess what we could have, though, this year? An all-indoors World Series.
No. Oh, yeah, we could.
We could have an all-indoors World Series if Milwaukee and Houston win.
Milwaukee can do that. I don't know if I'm a fan of that.
Well, has that ever happened before?
An all-indoors?
Buck, get to the research staff. Have we ever had an all-indoors World Series?
I'm going to go out on a limb and say no.
No, I don't think so.
Great research, Buck.
Toronto would be the only one. Toronto and Nobby can do that. Skydome against Minnesota? No.
You got to think of all these retractable roof stadiums.
That doesn't count.
It does, because that's Houston and Milwaukee. Yeah. But like Houston, the dome was closed the entire World Series last year against the Dodgers.
It's true. It was wet there.
As I'm thinking about this, how many NL teams actually play in domes? Because Milwaukee is the only one that comes to mind right off the top of my head.
Arizona can close the roof.
Arizona. So there's only two.
That might be it, though.
Yeah, and Arizona played the Yankees in their World Series, right?
Correct.
Which is not indoors.
Tampa Bay is in the indoors. AL.
Indoors. Yeah. Most of them are AL stadiums. When you think of Safeco, Minute Maid Park, the Astrodome, the
Twins used to be no longer. Do we consider a roof at Safeco an indoors?
Yes.
Why?
It's because not, you can block out the rain.
Okay, I mean, so we're just saying just because it blocks the rain. I've figured, okay, all right, if we could do an indoor stadium.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You could have a World Series with weather not being an issue whatsoever for both teams, I think is what we're qualifying this as.
That's part of baseball. That's a little discouraging. That's part of baseball.
Well, that's why the
Twins
have
everybody outside in the cold.
Target Field or whatever they call it where Minnesota plays now. Outdoor stadium, no roof.
Yeah.
That's a little weird.
That is weird.
Like you're in Minnesota
for God's
sake.
Not great for April,
God's
I'll tell you
sakes.
That much. It's bad. No. A lot of snow.
Okay. That's today in sports history. Let's stay on the baseball train because MLB to Portland. Did it get a little boost yesterday? The first of what could be many stories like this coming out. It is 6:16 on the Fan. All right. It is 6:22 coming up in about 10 minutes from now. We will have Ryan Leaf, former Washington State quarterback, joining us on the Catlin Capital Hotline. Got a little baseball talk. We were talking about teams with indoor stadiums. Coug Jack, MP1 Jesse, both chiming in. Marlins, NL ballpark with indoor stadium.
Yeah.
Also, do you hear the news out of Miami yesterday?
Miami?
Yeah, about the Marlins.
Yeah.
Remember how the sculpture was considered a public work of art?
Yeah.
They are taking it out. Derek Jeter saying, we're moving that thing out of there. The monstrosity will be removed.
I don't know what that is. What is that?
It's a home run
squid
thingamajigger.
Looks like something from a carnival.
No,
and it was going to be my Trim the Fat report, but we'll find something else.
That's all right. You can do it again.
Yeah. I mean, audience turns over.
Yeah,
it's
we can
6:23.
Oh, recycling, Buck.
Yeah.
You're fine.
I mean, that's in a couple of hours.
I hear they like recycling up here in the Northwest.
And you reduce and you reuse. But yeah, they're taking that out. Jeets finally won, so congrats. There you go.
It was hideous.
Mm-hmm.
It was dumb.
Yep, and now it's out. Also, we saw something yesterday that could be the very first in what will be many moves in the Major League Baseball to Portland.
Leverage.
It is a massive leverage play here, as the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim have officially notified the city that they are backing out of their stadium deal. Mm. They will opt out of their lease at Angels Stadium, and they are looking for a new ballpark. The Angels Stadium is the fourth oldest stadium in Major League Baseball. It is only older than or younger than Fenway Park, Wrigley Field, and Dodger Stadium.
Do you notice how when it comes to old iconic stadiums and stuff like that, like Chicago and Boston, and of course I know New York and Yankee Stadium tore down because theirs was literally falling apart. Mm-hmm. You had to build something new, but they kept a little bit of the old nostalgia. You know, all teams need a new stadium now. We know that Oakland Raiders are moving in the NFL because they're the poorest team in all of the NFL. They just don't have the money. They don't have the revenue. And you look at baseball now and you get to see the kind of talent that the LA Angels have. Of course you're going to go after. The only leverage play anymore is to take the team or the area or the city that you think you could move to, and that is Portland right now. It is either Portland or what other town, what other city could you think of? Nashville. You could also say Montreal. Mm-hmm. Whoever you think it is, you're going to use that leverage to generate so much money and so much power for your community. And I think the way you're looking at LA right now, the amount of money that they have in the city and the growth, the way the Rams are playing, now the Chargers, why wouldn't you do what LA's doing?
Yeah, and they always have been and always will be second fiddle in the city of Los Angeles, you know? But reality is that this is what we expected. This will be one of many teams. We thought it would be Tampa first, Arizona, like 1A, 1B on leverage plays of, hey, we're going to move. We're going to use our stadium for leverage. But we heard the Portland Diamond Project saying, we've already heard from teams that people wouldn't expect about potentially moving. This is probably one of them, but this is solely a leverage play because you don't move from Los Angeles to Portland.
No.
Right? I mean, unless you're an actual human being and you want cheaper rent, but that's not what professional sports want. You want to be worth the most, and where you can be worth the most is in LA, but Portland will be a pawn in this game, but Major League Baseball has kind of told the kind of this nod, nod, wink, wink thing. Hey, if you guys are willing to be leveraged, we'll give you an expansion franchise.
And those of you that get all upset about or say, how dare that these millionaires and billionaires use this, I think that the only way I can justify it is, and I I mean, I felt this a little bit during the past few months when the Mariners are trying to have a new vote for their $175 million renovation of Safeco, which is, you know, using tax dollar money. You have tax dollar money that's for CenturyLink up in Seattle too. But if you're the Oakland Raiders, the reason why you can't compete in the future is because you don't have the revenue. You can't pay Khalil Mack, literally cannot do it because you don't have any other way to generate funds. You're not an old owner. That's your only way of generating income is through that. Now, it's not a poor me moment, but if you're going to compete with LA, which you say the best city second fiddle, think about it. You have a championship, two championships. You have Dodgers, you have Angels, you have Chicago, and you have the Cubs and the White Sox and the Yankees. The Red. Every second fiddle has a championship.
Yeah.
In that city, yet you treat it like it's a good little second team over there.
Mm-hmm.
And here we are sitting at Portland going, well, fine, if you're not going to be happy with your second team, hand us over one of your second fiddles, please. Give us one of those second fiddles. We'll be happy for that.
And be thrilled to have it. And make no mistake, yesterday's move was very calculated by the Angels because they tried to get that stadium renovated a handful of years ago.
Yeah.
And the current mayor of Anaheim, he's totally against it. We're not going to do it. Well, guess what? He's in his final term. There's an election coming up in a couple of weeks. Mm.
See how that works.
You can get the mayors to sit there and say, we want the Angels to stay. The candidates to say, hey, we want the Angels to stay, or it's we're not going to do anything.
Hit the sports vote.
It's a calculated move by the Angels to see kind of what they're dealing with leadership-wise within the city moving forward. So they back out. Look, the Angels, very, very, very low possibility that they come to Portland, but this is what's going to be in play. Is it's going to be a leverage move.
Sure. And if you're an Angels fan, Mike Chosa is moving on. Yeah. He's no longer going to be a part of it. You have a young group. You have Shohei Ohtani. You certainly have Mike Trout. You have a lot of young talent. You're at the end of your expiring contracts with a couple guys. Certainly Albert Pujols is on the tail end of his career. Tail end, I'd say he's on the probably far tail end of his career. 2 years left in his deal, if I'm correct.
I think the end of the tail is falling off.
No, but still productive for an older player. It's not like, I mean, Nelson Cruz, these guys are older, but they're still able to elevate the baseball and be good, solid, older baseball players.
By the time it's Angels moving time, potentially to Portland, Albert Pujols may be in a retirement home. I mean, we're looking 5 years from now.
It could be 50.
5 years from now. And then you have, you know, that would be the most, like, Angels thing to do is, like, once they would finally move, Mike Trout would his contract would be expiring and he'd be able to move on because Trout, coincidentally, 2020, his final year.
I'm seeing 2021 is his final year.
That's not too far away, guys.
No, that's his unrestricted free agency year. 2020 is his final year under contract with them, according to SpotTrack.
Oh, I'm looking at SpotTrack as well. It says $30 million in 2021.
Well, look at that. Huh. Interesting. Well, Trout
spot off
21.
You guys have a spot off fest.
Yeah, 21 would be the year that is like the very earliest that you'd be talking.
Yeah.
Like the very earliest.
So 3 years away.
Yeah. Well,
you still got Disneyland Angels there, so don't worry about it, Anaheim.
And you have the Mighty Ducks.
Yeah.
No longer Mighty, just the Ducks.
And
anybody know how far it is from Anaheim to Inglewood? Where the new stadium for the shared stadium will be between the Rams and interesting.
No, I've you ask me about directions in Los Angeles and I have no idea what is north and south. I'm going to say
directions don't matter.
Ooh, I'm going to go very LA. 20 minutes.
20 minutes.
20 minutes everywhere in Los Angeles.
Okay.
All right, Angels back out of their stadium. Portland Diamond Project probably going to be used in a pond in this game, but as long as the Angels get their stadium and Portland gets a ball club in expansion, we're all happy here. Or the Angels move here, and Mike Trout is a Portland Trout. Do we name the team the Trout?
The Trouts.
You think a team's ever been named after their best player at its inception? Probably, right? Like way back in the day?
I'm assuming.
The Ruths.
That's right. That's right. Tiger Woods played for the Detroit Tigers back in the day.
Sure.
That's why they named him that. All right. Coming up next, the Cougs host the Oregon Ducks, and College Game Day is heading to Pullman. Former Cougs quarterback, now a host on Sirius XM's Pac-12 in the mornings, Ryan Leaf joins us next. Right now it's Buck with SportsCenter. All right. Just after 6:30, Dusty Hare, Cam Cleland with you. Joining us now on the Catlin Capital Hotline, former Washington State quarterback. He is now now, an analyst for FS1 and co-host of Pac-12 This Morning on Sirius XM. Ryan Leaf joins us. Good morning, Ryan. How you doing this morning, man?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Doing very well. All right, 15 years in the making. Old Crimson has been flying around College Game Day. The big question around Coug fans is, who should be the guest picker for Washington State on College Game Day this year? Will it be Ryan Leaf?
No. It will not be
just
Ryan Leaf.
Shut that down right away, Ryan. Just done. Nope, not at all.
No, I actually can't even make it. I have to... I've been blessed to be the keynote speaker at In-N-Out Burger's foundation event on Saturday called Slave to Nothing. They raise money for human trafficking and people with substance abuse issues on the street and stuff like that. So it probably more important, but really happy that Washington State finally got game day.
You know, Ryan, I mean, we're class of 1998, and we've been talking just recently about quarterbacks and looking at the size. And I remember, of course, you and I are going to go way back with just the battles that we had in the Apple Cup. But I want to get your thoughts on Justin Herbert. Just, I haven't seen a quarterback since you were there of that kind of size and talent and arm speed. I mean, of course, he can run a little bit. But I want you to give me his assessment thus far. I mean, he's slated to be the number one pick overall. Is it too much already to put on this guy? And what are you seeing from a kid that's standing back there and he's leading this Ducks team to now heading into Pullman and up against your Cougs?
Well, he is pretty darn good. And you played with a pretty good one, too. Brock Heward was very similar in size as well.
Yeah.
So his ability to lead, his ability to be accurate, move, and he has a strong arm, but people don't realize how big he is. I mean, he's almost as tall as I am, and he is as athletic as hell. So I suspect that he's going to be, if he decides to leave for the NFL, be the first pick in the NFL draft next year. And you better hope the Giants are sitting somewhere there so they can draft him.
You know, and Ryan Leaf is our guest on the Catlin Capital Hotline, former Washington State quarterback. He has got, numbers don't tell the whole story, though. I mean, 202 yards against Washington, but it was an efficient game, and it was one of those games where he did just enough to win. When you start looking at quarterbacks and evaluating that next level talent, fans get caught up in yards and touchdown passes. What is it that you see when you're watching a quarterback that says that is what's going to translate to the NFL from the college game?
Well, if you want a good comparison, go back and look to Andrew Luck's last season and their disparity between run and pass. Mm-hmm. They essentially have adapted the run first, pass second mentality, and no one faulted Stanford for what Andrew Luck was doing. They ran the ball 60% of the time and threw it 40% of the time and were very successful. So you can really make a solid comparison about those two at this point. And I always tend to look for yards per attempt. I think that's a really good measuring stick because that shows the completion percentage isn't necessarily throwing it within 5 yards of the line of scrimmage, but also going down the football field and being accurate at the same time.
You know, when Coach Leach came out and said balanced offense, you probably remember listening to him saying that, what is this 50-50 stuff? There's no such thing as that. Going into this game, I've watched enough of this type of offense over the years to be able to tell you that Garner Minshew comes in as a fifth-year guy coming in, almost a transfer, and is going to take over an entire offense. You watch him and you watch this team at Washington State. Coach Leach in the offseason, a little bit of turmoil, maybe going to Tennessee, but that's not the truth. He's found a way to make Washington State the type of place you go to be a quarterback. Can this offense, though, you look at it, without the ability to run the football, can they handle and stand up against the physicality of defense or maybe the type of defense that Oregon is now playing?
Well, they've been able to the last few years. They've won 3 in a row against Oregon. They've run 2 in a row, I believe, against Stanford. Now, where they haven't shown up is in the Apple Cup. So that's going to have to change, or they're never going to be able to win the North. So that's where they got to find their answer and more physicality. And I dare say run the football, yes, because that will keep Washington's offense off the field. It's an interesting concept. He has found out. He's built the foundation with what he can do with quarterbacks. He feels he recruits. He thinks that no matter the quarterback he recruits, they can function and do well in his offense. And defensively, I think, is where they really stepped up their game under Alex Grinch and now under Tracy Clays. That's where I think the change has really made them competitive in the North year in, year out.
Ryan, with the air raid offense, is it simplified for the quarterback so they can just come in and figure out? Does he make it easy for them, in your opinion, just that the reads are simple, the concepts are simple? Is that why the success happens so quickly with a lot of the quarterbacks?
Well, Gardner Minshew was also running this offense since high school, and he's been studying it with Hal Mumme. I mean, he understood it well, but yes. I mean, there's 10 passing plays in this offense. Only 10. And on each passing play, you have 5 options. And you don't have to read the defense. You just have to understand if it's man or zone, and then you go through your progression. Sometimes, and usually in the first quarter, you're throwing to the first and second guys in your progression. By the second and third quarter, you're almost to the third and fourth guys in your progression. And usually by the end of the game, second half, you're at the back of your progression and guys are open. And as long as you don't pass up open receivers, that's the biggest thing. You don't pass up an open receiver to try for a bigger play down the football field. That's not how the air raid works. You have to take what the defense gives you and you move down the field. And Gardner Minshew is doing exactly that.
You know, Ryan, we were talking about this, and every time we have like a national guest or somebody who covers the conference as a whole, we ask this question because it's so hard to figure out right now, and last week didn't help it. Who's the best team in the Pac-12 South?
USC probably, but we're going to find out this weekend with the Utah game. Utah's looked really good the last 2 weeks. Their defense is at the top of the conference. I suspect whoever wins this game most likely will win the South, but that may not actually be true because if Utah does win, they still have to play Oregon down the line. So USC has the most favorable schedule from this point on, but they have to get by Utah at Rice-Eccles, and that's very, very hard.
Do you think the conference here, as the Pac-12 sits today, with Larry Scott's leadership and the group that they're putting together, do you think the conference needs to do more nationally? Not only take care of how it schedules, I mean, back-to-back road games, bye. I mean, Washington came off a bye. Now Oregon's going to come off a bye. Everybody's going to get an opportunity in this. But we see the SEC, we see the ACC continually make changes to try to optimize their chances with their better teams. We're never going to know who's the best team, but does this conference need to improve in how they schedule?
Well, I mean, these are anomalies, right? You look at it. If Washington would have made that field goal, you wouldn't even really reference the fact that that Oregon had the bye and then they were playing at home. I mean, Washington would have won. So I think we put a microscope on these things when they don't go the way that we think they do. It didn't help them, but I don't necessarily feel like it hurt them. So I do think they can be better. I think it's ever evolving. I think Larry Scott is still figuring out exactly how this all works because this college football playoff came into effect a few years back. I don't know if they were truly prepared on how to make sure we were at the forefront and involved. It looks like we most likely won't get a team in for the second year in a row. We don't know how everything's going to play out down the line in the SEC and the other conferences, Notre Dame being an independent. But, I think the more content we can get out to the nation is going to be better so people see our product and understand that it's a very good one and it's very competitive.
He is on Twitter at Ryan D. Lee, former Washington State quarterback and host of Pac-12 This Morning on SiriusXM. You can hear Cam Cleland joining him after our show gets done as a guest. Ryan Leaf, thank you so much for the time, man. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Ryan, buddy. Really appreciate it, man.
You bet, guys. You guys have a great day.
You too. Interesting little nugget there where he said, it kind of does feel like Oregon has turned to that. He goes, like Stanford, Andrew Luck's senior year, run first, pass second. The numbers for Justin Herbert have not been gaudy by any stretch of the imagination.
No.
But the success of the offense is exponentially better because of the fact that they can run the football.
I don't know about you, but I am a big fan of teams that have the ability to run the football and then opens up everything in your entire offense. It's just this team is feeling like, when I say Oregon, the team feels like a complete team. How many times did I sit here and ridicule watching what Coach Helfrich had, which was basketball on grass, where you put your defense out, you score every minute, yet your defense can't bend. This defense is tougher. They run the ball downhill at you physically. I love that pistol look where it hands, and you get to have guys running at you with aggressive attacking mentality. I think it looks really good right now.
Also, one thing that really sticks out, that question that you asked about scheduling and Ryan's response about, you know, hey, this conference is kind of done it before, and now you're looking at it could be another year with no team in the playoff. Where does the Pac-12 go from here? 55305 is the Better You Today text, and we'll discuss that. Plus, Nick Bosa of Ohio State, he gone due to injury. Is this a big deal and of concern for major talents at major programs? Dustin Cam on the Fan.
Let's get texty.
I left a message.
A message? What number did you call?
2-4-9-5-6-7-8.
I can't hear you. You're trailing off. And did I catch a niner in there? Were you calling from a walkie-talkie?
No, it was cordless.
Text us now at 55305. Message and data rates may apply.
Just want to leave my number. Anyway, I think I was weird or desperate.
This is Textual Relations on the show that likes to be, over text. Dusty and Cam in the morning on 1080.
The brain of that person to actually say that?
The Fan.
55305, Better You Today text line. You mentioned something to Ryan Leaf. You were just, you know, it's the big picture about the Pac-12 conference and scheduling. I mean, we run into it every single year, whether it's television scheduling or it's, you know, back-to-back road games and playing on weeknights after traveling. And, you know, Ryan Leaf, he kind of brought up that point, like, hey, you know, this is the Pac-12's on the precipice of missing the playoff again.
Yeah.
And it's bad times. You know what's amazing about the narrative from the Pac-12 is that usually you hear these reports of something kind of leaking out about a guy being in trouble with his job. It's all public, like making up their own mind, and it's not being a construed narrative about Larry Scott is bungling the Pac-12.
Yeah, there's no question in my mind that it's not being run efficiently, and it's certainly not being run that helps buoy up the conference to make it look like it's better. And I don't need to lie or hide behind anything. I'm also not a fan of, and let's be, okay, I'll be straight up honest with this, is that I'm not a fan of using an excuse of the you're not good enough, or if you have a schedule put ahead of you and your leader tells you to do that, which is Larry Scott and it's chancellors and the athletic directors, then you play the schedule in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you can sit here and complain about it and whine about it and call fouls and say, oh, we went on the road. I mean, and he was right. If Washington makes the kick, you're in a different conversation.
Bingo.
You go on the road, you play Auburn on the road. These are things you do. I mean, Oregon has the schedule of three softer teams to start. You just do what you got to do because the conference is not doing the right things to be equal to. I like to feel if I'm going into a competition, I don't want to go into a competition with one hand tied behind my back. I feel like the conference of the Pac-12 is not equal to the Big 12, the SEC, the Big 10, or the ACC. That's the only thing that I would ask, is that the uniformity of what college football has turned into is that every conference is its own football league. Does that make sense? Realistically, I mean, I know conference and leagues are the same. But it really is. The officials do call officiating differently. Their interpretation of a foul is different than they are in the ACC. I see it this way. You see it that way. Joe Klatt told us about his talking with officials and seeing that. How you schedule is different. How your TV revenue is different. Everything is different. That's what makes the NFL so great. The uniformity. We are all together. College football needs to fix this where we're all separated. And that, my friend, will be the one that changes everything for college football.
You know, we've criticized the SEC because the ACC has joined suit. The Big 12 has added a conference championship game because they needed that extra game. The Pac-12 has played 9 conference games, as we know, for a really long time. All of these conferences that have shifted and conformed more or less to each other have all been hit with missing the playoff or in the threat of missing the playoff.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
The one conference that hasn't is the one that stuck up a middle finger to all of them and said, we're not playing 9 conference games.
Yeah.
We're not going to do something because you feel that it's more fair. The SEC is looking at getting 2 teams in to the college football playoff. Notre Dame, playing by their own rules.
Yeah, independent team.
Is saying, you know what? They're looking like they could get into the college football playoff now. And that says a lot about this kind of conformity that you're talking about. Without uniform rules, you should do what's best for your conference, not for what looks best from a fairness standpoint.
Oh, you know what the worst word to use in sports is? You just said it. Fair.
Yeah.
No such thing. There is not one time in my life in any sports competition that I said something was fair. Yep. Because it never is. From an injury to guys are bigger, guys are faster. School had to go on the road. School didn't have any money. Okay, certain quarterback wasn't as good. Other team, there's no such thing as fair. College football is not going to hide behind the blinders of saying that it could be fair. It's never going to be fair. But wouldn't you ask your conference and your leadership to kind of be equal to or try to achieve a goal of being equal to the ones that are winning? Mm-hmm. You know, it's like the definition of insanity. Doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. That's what Larry Scott, in my mind, since 2009, sat on his hands and said, look what we did, and buoyed out the chest and said, look at our deal, and said that was good enough. It's kind of like the team that wins one Super Bowl and the coach hangs around like Mike Sosa did, wins one World Series and hangs around for 30 years and says, that was good enough. Look what I did back in the day. It doesn't work. You have to play catch up.
This text on the Better You Today text line 55305 will be addressed later on in the show when we hear coach call audio next hour at 7:15. 8-team playoff fixes it. Does it? David Shaw and Herm Edwards both talked about that yesterday in the coaches call. We'll hear from them next hour. And coming up next, though, we have got the hot and cool, the hottest sports stories today. Can my teams just stop cheating? Dustin Cam on the Fan.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.